This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
To the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. This voice is leaving me. Thank you so much for staying with Guardian, and thank you so much for joining me here on 96.9 FM. So yesterday I talked about the amendments to the Bail Act. I talked about the things in the Bail Act that I couldn't really understand, or how those things in the amendment to the Bail Act would affect normal people, right? Somebody called yesterday and asked the question, since there has been an amendment to the Bail Act, what happens to the people that were awaiting bail during the time that the amendment was made? Because there are people that have already, I guess, gotten dates before Supreme Court in order to be able to apply for bail. But if, in fact, the Bail Act has been amended, then what exactly or which category those people fall into? I couldn't answer that. Another question was asked yesterday, whether or not all offenses now have been allowed to be given jurisdiction by the magistrate, or whether or not there have only been specific instances in which the magistrate was now allowed to grant bail. I wasn't particularly sure of that. And we also talked a little bit about the Dangerous Drug Act yesterday. We talked about my view that the Dangerous Drug Act already permits for the use of medicinal marijuana. And I believe, this is the gospel according to Levin, right? I believe that the fact that the act gives the minister the power to deem necessary who should possess, if in fact the minister, for whatever the reason, decided that he wanted to grant, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000 of them in an exercise of exploration, then technically he would have in his discretion the power to grant the use of recreational marijuana. Now, there are legal minds that offer otherwise. There are some that say that they can see the point that I'm reaching for. And then there are some of them that actually agree with me, right? And so since I'm not a lawyer, right, since I know only enough law to get from here to the parking lot, possibly, without going to jail, I decided that I would go and I would call a lawyer. And I want to say that when I asked around about a lawyer that would be able to dissect this kind of stuff, right, I had a QC call me and tell me, listen to me, if you're looking for a guy, this is the guy, right? And so I believe I've got the best and the brightest with me today in studio. We're going to talk a little bit about the amendments to the Bail Act. We're going to talk a little bit about the impending or proposed, or should I say at this point prophesied, because you know they could say anything, that don't mean it'll happen, legislation surrounding the Dangerous Drug Act. And then why are we creating a compendium of legislation when in fact If you look at the way the Dangerous Drug Act is already written, we could simply have a couple amendments to this act and we would be able to cure the problem in a whole lot faster time than the Prime Minister is promising. I think it is all in an effort to build political momentum. Of course, I do not know the mind of the Prime Minister, nor do I ever try to know his mind. But what I do or have noticed is that the Prime Minister is a man driven heavily by popular consensus, right? And although he very rarely does what it is the people actually want, he seems to always likes to put feelers out there so that he can gauge the tone or the temperature of people and then use that as a policy platform. Sometimes it works. Sometimes I think it could be rather dangerous, right? And so those are the things that we're going to talk about today. I'm joined in the studio. You may know him. You may know of him. You may have seen him around. Bijan Ferguson. He's Bijan Ferguson. He's my guest. He's got one of those funny letters in his name. Like, I have a Y in the middle of my name, so people never really know how to pronounce it. He has a J in the middle of his name, which is even more unusual than a Y, right? So Bijan Ferguson is my guest this morning, and we're talking about the amendments to the Bail Act. But first of all, Bijan, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Miller, and good morning to your listening audience.
Now, before we get started, because the people like to make sure, you know, it's the Bahamas, right? So people like to know who qualify you, right? What are your qualifications exactly so that we are aware of who we are speaking with?
My qualifications. Yeah. I am a private practitioner, attorney at law. I've been called to the Bahamas Bar for 5 years.
Okay.
Prior to that, I was a serving member of the Royal Bahamas Police Force, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I was seconded to the Attorney General's office, and I prosecuted for 2.5 years before entering private practice.
Okay.
Outside of that, I am also I'm an accountant before coming to the law.
You see this? These fellas have all kind of certification. You just say, who does be an accountant and a lawyer?
So I came to the law and fell in love with it, and it's my passion.
All right. So we could assume that you know what you're talking about. We could make the general assumption.
Lawyers give opinions.
Okay. All right, so we've seen the amendments to the Bail Act, right? We know, I think it was 2007, was it 2007 or 2008 that the original amendment to the Bail Act was made?
I think it was in 2011.
11, okay.
Yeah, 2011.
That was under the Ingram administration.
Yes.
And what exactly did they take away from the Bail Act at that time?
Well, the 2011 amendment basically took away powers from the magistrates to consider bail on certain offenses.
Okay.
And so those offenses were the indictable offenses were tried summarily in the magistrates court, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those matters, the Supreme Court has all the jurisdictions to consider the issue. So obviously you would have to apply to the Supreme Court on matters of bail.
Mm-hmm.
That's the 2011 amendment. And so when you had a lot of persons charged with, you know, offenses, threats of death, causing harm, so they had to appear before the magistrate court. The magistrate did not have jurisdiction to consider the issue on bail.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would have to face the criminal justice system, be remanded to prison,
right,
and make an application at the Supreme Court to have the issue.
How long is that process?
generally, 2 weeks turnaround.
Yeah.
3 weeks sometimes. You know. And so you had people sitting in prison waiting for a hearing for bail.
Now, when you say indictable offenses, so that people know, what is the short list of indictable ones?
The indictable offenses by law theft is basically an offense where you are sentenced for more than 2 years. The punishment attracts more than 2 years.
Okay.
So it's considered an indictable offense.
Causing harm?
Yeah.
Threats of death.
Yeah, but those matters are triable in the magistrate court.
Right.
Yeah, but because of the punishment.
But I just wanted people to know the ones that you could go to jail. So if you tell the woman, I can slap you, and when I slap you, this slap might kill you, you could go to jail awaiting bail in the Supreme Court for a matter like that.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So you didn't have to have, like, gun possession or anything.
No.
All right.
No.
So we took away the power of discretion from the magistrate. What do you anticipate was the intent of the law during that time?
Well, I think during the time, it's all the climate. I think during the time there was a, you know, the political directorate at that time took a get tough approach on crime.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had record murder numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, legislation was crafted to address the mischief in society at the time.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. I don't have the empirical data to say how effective it was or not, but I would say a lot of innocent people were hurt in that process. I could speak to that.
Right. So, do you then, from your vantage point, believe that possibly it reached too far into society?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I have this theory. I say that I understand the intent of that, or I understand the intention of the law. Right. But I believe that while well-intended, the law didn't calculate that they would create what I call hybrid criminals, right? Which is a guy that probably would never have gone to Fox Hill Prison, right? Because he's just not into criminality. But he finds himself in a position where, I don't know, something happens. He slammed the door on his girlfriend's finger. She get a blood bruise. She go to the police, make a report. He's now charged with causing harm or grievous harm, depending on how big the blood bruise is. And now, here's a guy that would otherwise never have seen Fox Hill Prison, sitting in prison because he has to go there while he awaits
Absolutely.
A bail hearing. Absolutely. And if I'm not mistaken, we've also heard justices of the Supreme Court decry
Absolutely.
This practice. Yeah.
Yes, because you took a lot of time away from judges
mm-hmm.
who have very huge workloads,
right.
And you know they had to create time now to deal with these issues of bail.
Right.
And interesting and. The judge is dealing with the issue of bail, but it's the magistrate that has to deal with the trial.
Right.
And so, you know, the suitable thing would be is to allow the magistrate who has carriage of the trial to also consider the issue of bail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. But it created a mess.
There was also another issue that I think was created out of this, which was people volunteered to be criminals. I can't find a better way to say it. So the general feel was you get arrested because you slam your girlfriend finger in the door. You know that to plead not guilty means 2 weeks automatically in Fox Hill Prison.
We refer to it at the criminal bar as extortion. It was extortion offenses.
Okay.
So you were making criminals. So you people fair prison. So when they walk into court, they plead guilty.
Right.
At the first instance.
Right, so that they could get a conditional discharge.
Yeah, or some other punishment, but it goes on your record.
Right, and it's on your record.
It goes on your record.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we had a lot of situations like that. You know, notwithstanding lawyers would obviously look at the factual matrix of a case and give an opinion, but these people, listen, I go into Fox Hill.
Yeah.
And they go to court and plead guilty.
So, the amendments now. What difference are the amendments to the amendments of the Bail Act now?
Well, I mean, the current amendment, the Bail Amendment Act 2020, mm-hmm. it now restored that. It gave the magistrate back the jurisdiction.
All of them? All of the powers? All of the powers to consider bail?
To consider bail and those offenses, those offenses that they previously took back from them.
Okay. So that would be, would it also be
the ones like the causing arms?
But what about the more prevailing ones? Possession of dangerous drugs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. So the magistrate has
now could deal with possession of dangerous drugs, and the indictable, the murders, the armed robberies, they're still obviously before the Supreme Court. The issue of bail, you go to the Supreme Court to address those.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is not something that was on the short list of things I wanted to talk to you about, but there's something that I've always considered. Why do we take the route of VBIs as opposed to preliminary inquiries? Like wouldn't a preliminary inquiry save us tax dollars eventually, because we would be sure that by the time as we got to a Supreme Court trial, we would actually have a case rather than this instance where people go before the Supreme Court and the AG's office can't land cases?
Well, I can't. I know the political directorate at the time thought it was a short circuit to cutting time and getting matters before the Supreme Court. So they saw it, I guess, fit at the time to take the VBI route, voluntary bill of indictment route,
mm-hmm.
Basically to do away with the preliminary inquiry, bypass the magistrate's court,
mm-hmm.
and you know, short-circuit the magistrate and the Supreme Court. Whether or not
that has that had success, though?
I really don't want to opine on it because I don't have.
I know you don't have the data, but you're in and around it every day. Have you sat in court cases and thought to yourself, how do we not know this? If we had done a preliminary
inquiry, the backlogs are still, the backlogs are crazy at the Supreme Court.
Okay.
So I don't see. I don't see. But for various reasons, though, to be honest, for various reasons, you have matters that are not proceeding before the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And, you know, most times you're relying on these other agencies for documents and items of evidence and, you know, it obviously the matters can't proceed until you have all the documents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd be waiting on a pathologist report in a murder matter. You could be waiting, you know.
I know.
And that stops the trial from really coming off, you know. So it's an injustice to both the victims and also the defendant.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I just always wondered about that. Like, I wondered, like, why would we not go back? Because I've not been a lawyer, but I have had an opportunity
Absolutely.
To work around courts. And, like, I've sat in courts on a couple of occasions and thought to myself, well, how did they not know that, right?
Yeah.
And I know from reading that there is a step that's called the preliminary inquiry. And if you can't get past that, then it don't make no sense we go to the Supreme Court. And I imagine that if you had done a preliminary inquiry, we wouldn't be wasting precious Supreme Court time at this time.
Yeah. But I think we'll encounter, I mean, you can go to the same issues because you're relying on documents to prove, you know, that you have a prima facie case.
Mm.
And so you're waiting on forensic reports. Sometimes the reports or those analysis are done out the jurisdiction. So you're waiting on on the results from them. The ballistic report from the police lab. You're waiting on. So there's just a number of things that have matters that just can't come off.
Okay, so let's go back to the Bail Act, right? Because the route I took yesterday with it, we were supposed to be in here yesterday, but, you know, he was over there making sure that no innocent man was being sent to prison, right?
Say no innocent. We all presume innocent.
Precisely. Absolutely. So you were over there making sure that no innocent man was being sent to prison.
Yeah.
But how do you estimate, just from your everyday interaction with the court, with people that find themselves before the court, are people even aware that there has been an amendment now made to the Bail Act? Because I think a lot of people still operate completely in ignorance that that there has been another amendment made and that you no longer have to go to the court and go and volunteer to be a criminal.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you retain the service of an attorney,
a lot of people do not.
Well, that is true. But the court itself, the magistrate itself, will then obviously advise the unrepresented person, you know, that they could consider the issue of bail once the offense is one that, you know, they are entitled to. So I would say that those persons or litigants that are before the court, they are aware. The general public, I don't know.
Do you think this is making life less difficult for ordinary people, though? Because, you know, I tried to figure out which of the last pieces of legislation during the tenure of this administration have actually been ones that regular people can say, oh, well, that made sense, that benefited regular people. Do you consider this one of those that actually touches common people?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's, this is long overdue. You know, this, I think you would hear the opening of the legal year, you had countless chief justices speak to the issue. You know, we need to restore the jurisdiction to the magistrate. So this was long overdue. You know, I think this obviously touched and concerned the majority of people, those who come before the criminal justice system. And interestingly, you know, people believe that you're beyond it and it can't happen.
It could happen very easily.
Someone walk into a police station and just make bare allegations against you.
Right.
And you could be
arrested and charged and before the court.
Absolutely. And so, yeah.
I actually remember a very, very recent situation. A very good friend of mine. I mean, one of the greatest guys I know. Somebody says that he was somewhere and they assume it was him that I think I tried to run a car over them or something like that. And he said, I wasn't even there.
Absolutely. Seen it countless times.
Yeah, and
people
3 weeks.
False reports of rape against individuals, you know. I'm not saying that the issue of rape is not real, but
it's
every
very,
case
yeah.
you have to deal with on
yeah.
its own merits.
Yeah.
But you have people who go to police stations and make false reports.
Yeah.
That is true. It
yeah.
happens.
And the poor chap gets before the magistrate. And the only thing the magistrate can say to him is, beloved, I hear you.
Exactly. Your day will come for trial.
Yeah, we'll see you in 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so people that now have been before the court, like there are people that have, I guess, applied for bail in the Supreme Court, possibly have a date for bail hearing. Now that there's the amendment, did they make the amendment retroactive? Does it
no,
affect?
No, it doesn't.
So it only takes
the effect. Supreme Court always had jurisdiction to hear bail. So
even if
you denied or the issue wasn't dealt with in the magistrate, you could have applied to the Supreme
Court. No. Listen to the question. What about those people who had a causing harm,
uh-huh.
right? They're in Fox Hill. They've made the application to the Supreme Court to have their bail hearing heard.
Uh-huh.
Now that there's been an amendment to the Bail Act, because this is what somebody called me to ask me yesterday, I didn't know. How do they now proceed? Do they?
You said that they have a pending application before the Supreme Court. It'll be heard.
There's no other. They have to now continue in that process.
Yeah, I think that the application is there. Date has been set.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be heard, and the issue will be considered. But from December 2020 going forward,
right.
Then the magistrate could consider all of those issues. But anything that was in the Supreme Court, it would be heard.
Okay. All right. So now let's get to the Dangerous Drugs Act, because that's the other one that I want to talk about a bit. The Prime Minister is suggesting that they have, I don't know, a war room of lawyers somewhere drafting this wonderful, I imagine it's Bible-thick document, right? Because I don't know how long it would take to draft this piece of legislation. If there's legislation already, you could literally just lift most of the stuff and, you know. But they make it sound so difficult. What exactly are your anticipations coming out of this new piece of drug legislation that the already existing legislation would not cover, does not cover, or possibly will cover, particularly if we're talking about medicinal marijuana, which I think was his specific words. As far as I am aware, not being legally trained in mine at all, the Minister of Health, or doctor or otherwise, already possesses the power to grant people the use of marijuana for medical purpose. So what exactly are we anticipating will be gained out of new legislation?
I mean, to be quite frank, I cannot anticipate. I really don't know. But I can opine that the current Dangerous Drugs Act
mm-hmm.
address medicinal marijuana.
Mm-hmm. In which sections?
In particular, let's say Section 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's start with the statutory, the definitions, interpretation section, Section
mm-hmm.
2.
Sure.
It tells you who is a qualified person,
mm-hmm.
right? The qualified person is a medical doctor, a dentist, mm-hmm. medical professionals. Go to Section 24 of the Dangerous Drugs Act.
Mm-hmm.
In Section 24, it specifically states that subject to the provisions of the Act, a qualified person is authorized so far as may be necessary for the practice or exercise of his profession, function, or employment, and in his capacity as such, to be in possession of and to supply a dangerous drug.
Mm-hmm.
That addresses medicinal marijuana. That very section, Section
right.
24.
Right.
So medicinal marijuana, a regime is already in place.
Right.
I'm of that view.
Right.
And that's my opinion.
Right.
What needs to be addressed is decriminalization of marijuana. So if the police happens to stop you and you have a gram or two joints,
mm-hmm.
so instead of charging someone with possession of intent to supply, you decriminalize marijuana where you say, okay, he had less than an ounce in his possession, it's not criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Over an ounce, then yes, it attracts a criminal sanction.
Mm-hmm.
That's what needs to be. The amendment needs to address situations like that, because you have numerous instances where young men, in particular, come before the courts with small amounts of marijuana
yeah.
and just attracting criminal records and being excluded from the economy because you can't get work. And I'm of the opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you exclude someone from the economy, what do you expect them to do? It drives them deeper into criminality.
Well, I have this view, right? My view is mildly different from yours, right? I do not exactly support the decriminalization of marijuana. I don't think there's a based on what I understand from the Dangerous Drugs Act, I don't think there is a need to do it, right? I think the only thing would then the only thing we would need to do in the law is reclassify the way we look at dangerous drugs and remove marijuana in its classification from the category of dangerous drugs, and then you would simply need the right to possess it. For instance, I am a gun carrier. Guns are not legal in the Bahamas. However, the Commissioner of Police has said to me that for the purposes of quail hunting, I could use this firearm. Now, whether that's a quail jumping through my window or one in the bush.
We're looking for one in the bush.
Right? The point I'm making is, I don't know if I want an economy where people are allowed to exercise a practice that I can't necessarily see the clear lines towards the way it also empowers my economy, right? Like, if I drink liquor, I drink liquor. The person that sells me liquor pays taxes, right? In a reclassified state where the crime now is failing to legally or lawfully possess, right, which would mean that you're registered as a marijuana smoker, you probably have a card that looks like an NIB card, you pay $1,200 a year for it, you could now possess marijuana in any quantity you want, because some people want to possess more than two joints, right? Like, there are people that don't want to buy it a joint at a time. Then sure, then have right at it. And I believe that the Dangerous Drugs Act also gives the minister that power, because it says that the minister, in his discretion, can grant the license. So what exactly, all we now need to do is change the language about how we classify marijuana in the law, and I think we've solved all the problems. We could throw all the documents they're working on today away, and marijuana could be there for recreational use tomorrow.
I guess, I mean, I hear your point. It could be a route, but, you know, a mode to get there. But I'm just of the view that the current legislation, it addresses...
It's potent enough.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
One of the other reasons I oppose legalization of marijuana is because, you see, I feel like full-fledged legalization does nothing for the persons that have been the consumers over the last 40 years. So all of the young men that have gone to jail, all of the young men that have borne criminal records, all of them that have lost their families, some of them have lost their livelihoods, as a result of marijuana, will not be the benefactors of the legalized industry. First of all, they don't have land.
Economic sense. They, I agree.
And so in order to grow marijuana, you need land. And if not land, you
unless the government is going to come with a strong policy and true, give land to you to do it.
Or you need to be able to do it via hydroponics. And these fellas don't have no hydroponics money, right? And so now I feel like the push towards legalization is an oligarchic one and not necessarily one from the basis of fixing the root of the issue, which is we want to stop criminalizing young men. You see me?
But I don't know. I think it's when you consider the historical approach with marijuana, it had more to do with racism. Like, we may not, like, you know, I've done countless papers and research on the issue. It all came about where, in particular, the United States of America, they really had a disdain for Mexicans. And so Henry Anslinger, who was their first, I guess the founder, the one of the first directors of their Bureau of Tobacco, and which eventually came the Drug Enforcement Agency, he just went on off his own and basically was able to convince the global community that marijuana should be labeled. No science behind it at the time. No, absolutely no science. And so they just put marijuana on as a Schedule I drug and, you know, deemed it as dangerous because that was the culture of that ethnic group. And, you know, America being the big dog of the world, it basically... It passed on. That's the history of it.
And that actually made the trafficking of marijuana more dangerous because I think Aaron alluded to this yesterday, because then people started moving marijuana in the same shipments as cocaine. And then you ended up with marijuana that was contaminated. Yep. And of course we saw what happened there. But I mean, there is science now that does that you know, marijuana doesn't necessarily have harmful attributes. They do suggest though that marijuana does carry in some strains strong levels of THC. And we know that THC alters the brain. And we also know that the brain does not completely form itself until a person is at the age of 30. 28, I think it is. No, I think it's 28. 28 or 30 is the full development of, I think the lobe is called your occipital lobe.
It could be. I thought it was 28. And the brain stops growing.
And if you don't develop your brain until you're 28, then I say not do not smoke marijuana until you're 28.
Well, that's the approach with alcohol. You have a limit when you can access alcohol. Mm-hmm. Some jurisdictions is 18, some is 21.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go and consume it. You know, you make an informed decision and you go and consume it. But they don't make criminals out of people with alcohol.
I agree.
And I would say the Rastafarians in this community has been targeted the worst or has suffered the most because marijuana has been a part of their culture, their system.
Sacrament. Yeah.
Absolutely. And they've been targeted from the 60s and the 70s because of marijuana.
Mm.
And so if any legalization takes place, I think they should be the benefactors in some serious.
I don't foresee it though. Like I do not foresee.
It's just my, and I
agree. I agree. They ought to be, and that is the position I take. That the people that have been made the monsters ought to economically benefit, right?
Absolutely.
But again, at the very least, in order to be a cultivator of marijuana on any real level, you would first need land. Many of the people that use marijuana don't own no land.
But Rastas get land.
They got some land.
That's what I'm saying.
Right?
I think they should be at the forefront. That's me.
But the land is only half the battle. Now we've got to figure out how to cultivate this land, how to get these crops up and running. Because farming isn't you put the seed in the ground Monday and Friday you got a tree.
Yeah.
You need time. You need at least 6 months to 8 months turnaround time. I could tell you from farmer friends of mine, some years you put the crop in the ground, you get beautiful trees. You just don't get no fruit, right? And you know, so in order for someone to take this investment on, it has to be somebody not with just the land, but also with the financial wherewithal to weather the process. And again, I don't see that being the consumer. So in my estimation, it would make far better sense for the Bahamas to continue in the practice that we are now illegally doing, which is to import the product and break the economy into sectors where there's importers, distributors, suppliers, and users. And then that way, we collect something for the public treasury at every tier of this marijuana use. That is what I find to be most beneficial for all. Because I'm never going to smoke marijuana.
Yeah, that's another point. I don't.
But that doesn't mean I don't want to benefit economically from it.
I don't think there's a large. I really don't have the data before me, but I think there were some surveys that were conducted that, you know, I guess indicate those who consume marijuana. Mm-hmm. I don't know the numbers, but I don't think it's a huge segment of the population that consumes marijuana.
But I would gladly, if I was allowed to be a distributor of marijuana or an importer of marijuana, import, I'm a businessman, right? I would gladly import it if it was importable legally and sell it because that would be my benefit. I have no desire to reap the benefit of consumption. But I think the consumer ought to register himself as a consumer, pay his tax, and consume it however he likes it. Because you don't tell me not to drink 10 cups of gin, do you? So why should I restrict his consumption to 2 joints? No, man, smoke a pound. You understand me?
Yeah.
And the reason I don't care if you smoke a pound is because for every ounce of this pound you smoke, I collect 10 cents. And I feel like if we explain the economy of it that way, more people might actually buy into this notion. But all we push is the idea of legalization, legalization, legalization. And I say to people already, let's look at the wholesalers around you. How many of them look like regular people? Let's look at the shipping companies around you. How many of them look like regular people? Those were the industries of our grandparents' age. If we legalize an industry like this thing, it will simply be swallowed up by more people that do not look like us. That is my general thought on the entire thing.
Well, I mean, I've been looking at how Jamaica operates. Mm-hmm. Jamaica has a regime in place. I think they've even entered into certain arrangements with Canada. Mm-hmm. So they're into full-scale production, and us, they're going to be dealing with marijuana in a sensible way.
Mm-hmm.
We still have all our, in my view, all our eggs in the basket with tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think tourists also want to come and just experience this Caribbean.
See, now you're getting me excited because you're talking about the sin culture, right?
Well, I mean, the reality is, and that's people travel for various reasons. They're not coming here because we are this Christian culture.
Yeah, they ain't coming here because you all got good Bibles. I tell you.
Because, you know, it's. I mean, you know, just going on point. I saw all the outrage with Carnival, right? Where we had they had indications where the Christian Council and other people in society were speaking out about how people were dressed for Carnival. But every day when I just drive or stroll along Bay Street, I see tourists coming off the boats.
Mm-hmm. Jess is naked.
Just walking. Just, nothing on.
Jess is naked.
Walking right along to Junkanoo Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no outrage, mm-hmm. you know? But
maybe because we see them as they're getting right back on the cruise ship.
Well, perhaps. I don't know.
It's also, like I said, and this is also off the topic. It's like I said, somebody had said that they wanted to stop the Dominican women from coming in because we knew what they came in for, right? And I said to them, that is a reasonable argument. However, you have now got to consider, because Bahamian men are not going to stop consuming this vice. So now you've got to consider, when we no longer have the foreign women that come in duplicitously to perform this task, right? Which of your cousins are you comfortable with seeing turn cat gut in a building? You see? So you have to balance it, right? Like, there has to be a level of interaction where you say, okay, so my people enjoy the consumption of sin at this level. How do I now balance that, whether or not I need importation, immigration labor, et cetera, et cetera? And so those are the kinds of things that we've got to think about when we walk into legislation.
And like you, I mean, you deem it sin, but I mean, you know, most of those industries attract significant taxes.
You pay taxes for them. Listen to me. You preach to the choir. This the choir you're preaching over here.
And I think we just got to get more sophisticated in our thinking. You know.
Let me ask you a question. You're a lawyer. If you had an opportunity, you do drafting as well, right?
Not so. Well, I mean, you draft. In terms of writs for court.
Yeah. So the question is, if you had to, like, if you were somebody right now, I guess drafting legislation for the legalization of marijuana, or the legalization of medicinal marijuana, or the legalization of any kind of marijuana, what are some of the things you think must be in there for it to be fair, for it to be viable, for it to be economical, and for it to be reasonable to the minds of both people that want to invest, but also equally as fair to people that have been at the consumption level? What are some of the major tenets you think need to be in that?
That kind of drafting is a specialty.
Okay.
Right? That's a specialty area in law, drafting legislation.
Mm-hmm.
But any drafting of legislation, obviously, I think a starting place, you must make sure that it is constitutional. It has to comply with the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to look at those articles in the Constitution to ensure, you know, it's no... nothing is being offended. But where we are seeking to address the consumers, like you say, you would want to make sure that you just do away with some of the discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
You want to ensure that those who, I guess, the segment of population who you want to protect is protected.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are going to produce, you know, you will have the segment, you would have various segments in the legislation. It's all about what you are seeking to do,
mm-hmm.
the objective of the legislation. I think what you're trying to...
I'm trying to figure out, what do you think, as somebody that supports decriminalization, what do you think
I support decriminalization, right. Yes.
As somebody that supports decriminalization, what are some of the things that you think are important or that must be added in to legislation surrounding dangerous drugs?
Well, I mean, if we address decriminalization, we want to establish what is the amount that mm-hmm. we're going to, what is a recommended amount. I think our local commission, they have a suggested amount. I think it may be under an ounce,
mm-hmm.
And I think they even indicate that the production of 3 plants per person or something like that. So amendments to speak to those things based on what's recommended from the Marijuana Commission's report, their work.
Here's another question. The other question I have for you, right, and this is actually one that I took the DNA to task on, right? The DNA says that they wanted to decriminalize small quantities of marijuana. And I have this opinion that small amounts of marijuana come out of big amounts of marijuana. they don't, like, small, like, you can't just say, I'm going to grow a leaf of marijuana. This leaf came off of a bushel, right?
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, so you say that you're trying to fix this thing, but I think it is kind of tongue-in-cheek, though, people say. Like, you get an ounce of marijuana out of a pound of marijuana. So what? So the guy that is going to go to jail because he had a pound of marijuana in his possession is a terrible criminal and ought to be in jail. But you're telling me that the guy who has a dime bag of marijuana is a poor, defenseless child who just was misguided and needs direction and he shouldn't go to jail. I don't understand that argument.
I'm of the view, too, that I think we have sufficient institutional structures to deal with it, right? Let's look at BAMSI.
Mm-hmm.
There's, hundreds of acres down there that they, I guess, I don't know if they have all under production, but I'm pretty sure they could earmark a specific amount of acreage to perhaps grow a particular strain of marijuana where the research, based on science, you know, we have very brilliant people. Mm-hmm. So they can indicate and dictate which strain, which grade of marijuana we're gonna deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, legislation could speak to that.
Okay.
BAMSI could take a lead in that.
Mm-hmm.
Research and economies could grow and flow from that. That is an institution that's already in existence.
Somebody here is asking me, are you a lawyer or are you a politician?
I'm not a politician. But it's just an area that I'm really, I just seeing so much. The legislation has just been, I don't know, people have just been impacted negatively by this legislation, very seriously.
Mm.
Because two or more packages, right, you deem to be
intent to supply. Well, maybe we could adjust that. That amendment in itself is, because then, is the possession of marijuana an indictable event?
Possession of marijuana?
Yeah, just the possession. No. The intent to supply is the indictable event. So if we adjusted the indictable amount, I mean the intent to supply amount, that in itself may actually cure some of the difficulties we have with our young men.
Perhaps.
All right, let me read a couple of text messages. Text right here says, cannabis takes 3 months to reach maturity and it doesn't need as much attention as other plants. That's why it's called weed. I have no clue. I don't know. I have zero cannabis knowledge. Good morning to you and your guests. Simply decriminalize cannabis because we all know from the Bahamas government, plus their hands, put their hands on it, the quality will go down and the prices of cannabis will be higher. When cotton was the cash crop, the black market had illegal cotton. When corn was the cash crop, the black market had illegal corn. Same thing with black sheep wool. Black capitalism or repatriations offends white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Let's take the phone call. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Good morning, Mr. Miller. How you doing?
Hey, Spark. You know, whenever I talk about cannabis, I certainly, Sparky is going
to
be on the phone.
Well, because you was a child to me.
I know.
You was a little boy.
Bigger than some
and
of the
then
little boys.
And you're talking behalf about the thing, but you've never been exposed to, only because you was working on the defense force, you've been around it.
Yeah, no problem.
But you ain't never taken it, stick it in your mouth and smoke it.
No. I never smoked.
You ain't drink no rum?
I drink a little bit of liquor every day.
Sure. You smoke some cigarette?
No, I don't smoke cigarettes.
You don't smoke, so but then we got people like y'all who make a decision and pass his judgment, who never touch these things and don't know what effect it has on me or other people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 69 years old. Now I wouldn't do it in the Bahamas because it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to embarrass my family, go to court, and go to jail for a little doggone split.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been smoking since I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
On the blocks, walking up and down the valley. I remember one time I used to wake the Delta International Biking. Mm-hmm. And I used to walk from Madera Street over Centerville Hill, down Shirley Street, down Bank Lane past the CID, towards the bank in the morning with a joint in my hand smoking.
They probably make the dangerous drug act for you, eh, Sparky?
No, but what I'm saying is it never bothered me. Remember I said I was waking to a bank.
Yeah.
Dealing with people's money, people's business. I never been arrested. I never did nothing. I never break no law. You never see me falling on the ground drunk. I never killed nobody or do nothing. Mm-hmm. Stupid. It never bothered me. Mm-hmm. To me, whenever it happens, whenever I smoke, I just used to like to listen to good music, and I always have a big appetite. That's the effect of that on me. But I don't see these people who make the judgment as what should be legal, what should not be legal, based on, and they never had no affiliation with it. But they know what the reason is, and you know what the reason is. It's a big money maker.
Mm.
Why should they go out? I could go out and I could get by a pack of tomato seeds, beet seeds, and seeds from the produce exchange, come over and plant them in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I go out and plant a little marijuana seed in my backyard, grow me one or two plants, so I can sit on my porch and smoke my joint for my own personal pleasure? Why do I have to go to some political son who they gave a license to be at the grove to do a farm to sell to dog pharmacies for me to get it as medical marijuana? Why can't I grow me a marijuana tree so I can have my joint to smoke for myself the same I can grow my tomato or my tobacco leaf or my broccoli or something like that? Why you got to put a limit on me?
Well, I think
that's what God give me.
Well, what I think they're going to try to regulate, Sparky, what do you call it? Quality control, right?
Yeah.
Which if you follow what's happening in Canada now, that is a big deal. Like you know what I mean? They have massive regulations on how the marijuana can be grown, the level of THC, la 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 la. If I let you grow it in your yard, Sparky, then you turn around, you put chicken manure on it. We find out 10 years later, chicken manure makes the THC super high potent and makes you delirious. And now the government can't regulate what the general expectation should be for people that use marijuana. So that is why I imagine they won't just let anyone. Yeah, just grow it in a rock hole in the back of your yard.
Standards.
Because they want to make sure they put standards in place. Well, listen, we're almost out of time, right? So the amendments to the Bail Act took effect when? December 20th, 2020, is it?
The Dangerous Drug Act?
No, the
amendment to the Bail Act.
Yeah.
2020.
So all of the people now that are out there, if you're going before the magistrate's court, you do not have to go and plead guilty like you probably would have been advised by your cousin.
It's sentenced to the 24th of November, 2020.
Okay. And now you could just go before the magistrate's court no matter what the offense is except for what, murder?
Murder is indictable. So
you go and plead not guilty, the magistrate could actually... If you go for murder, don't murder nobody. That may be a better idea than trying to figure out how to get off in the magistrate's court. But I wanted to do this show, Beyond, because, like I said, I mean, I've watched young men. I sit before the court, and like I've listened to young men say, "Your Honor, I ain't do this, but I can't go to jail." And they understand that a not guilty plea instantly bounds the hands of the magistrate. So it's good to see that was given back to the magistrate. Under Free National Movement Administration. I think that is, if there is anything that they will get my respect for in this entire 5 years, no, I mean, that because I'm an inner city boy. And I got inner city friends. Yeah. And my friends, for whatever the reason, may not have the wherewithal that I do. They may not have the resolve that I do. And for them, sitting in Fox Hill Prison, they ain't into that.
Agree.
So, you know what? I slap her. Now that on your record, now when you try to get a job, the fella say, "Well, I don't want nobody who slap people." And bam, now Pookie can't get a job. It's the only thing he could do now.
Deep in the criminality.
Stay on the blocks. And so I think the amendment to the Bail Act was a pretty decent thing. Someone says, "Only GMO hybrid seeds grow in 3 months." Well, I don't know. I have to take your word for it. I have to take your word for it. Miller, instead of the government wanting to answer questions for the Bahamians, they passing bills about gold coins. Elsewhere, always in house. Praising people and not explaining these bills. His entire contributions are all about who did a good job in government and who should be thanked. Call elections, man. All right. So, listen, I got to have you back, Beyond. And we'll talk a little bit more about the law. Because there are a lot of things about the law that people are unaware of. And hopefully we'll be able to see if we could educate them. Thank you so much for coming. I am a music in the background. Yeah. I think I'm supposed to read this thing. Hold on. Let me get active. That's what it's supposed to be. Don't go anywhere, I'm still here. Can I find it? Where is it? Nope, don't have it. Anyway, it's been Levin Miller. I'm Unleashed on your radio each weekday at 11. right here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. So please join me every weekday right here on Guardian 96.9 FM. It's your station for fresh news and smart talk, so don't go anywhere. They've got news. Juan McCartney, he's up next.
Walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the